Welcome to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, coming at you across the web with the most exciting interviews and the best in Ohio State football and basketball coverage. Here's your host, Joe Dexter.
What is up, Buckeye Nation? Hello and welcome back to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, the show that might get drunk, but we don't get on a PA system when we do so. Claire Crawford, Joe Dexter here. Hey, Claire, how's it going?
Hi, Joe.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're having a better week than Mary Sue Coleman.
Oh, my gosh. She's an embarrassment. I'm sorry, that is so wrong. But okay, so I'll let you preface it, and then I'll make a little more comment on it.
Okay, so President Mary Sue Coleman was at Michigan Stadium. They gave her an award for her 12th year of service to the school. And she talked at halftime of Michigan-Nebraska, and she got on the mic in front of 100,000-plus, and here's what it sounded like at Michigan Stadium on Saturday. Wow, that's all I got to say. Holy cow. Oh, man, you can't tell me that she's not drunk.
She's definitely drunk, but what everyone is saying, like all the websites and stuff, especially like the CBS local website in Detroit, they're trying to say that it was the feedback from, they're even blaming it like on the wind, that the wind was causing such horrible feedback in the stadium that she could hear herself talking. It was her wireless microphone that was giving her such trouble. And I'm pretty sure in honor of her 12th year, she did 12 shots. And it had nothing to do with anything having to do with the audio system. That was rough.
Hey, if I had to be at a game after halftime with Michigan-Nebraska this year, I'd be drunk too. It's okay, Mary Sue Coleman. We understand.
Okay.
Hey, I know working in radio, too, that when you have a PA system that doesn't work right or you're having interference, you don't slur your words. Look, see, I'm even drunk right now.
There you go. Exactly. So apparently, like, a local radio station did a test, and there's an app that you can download to kind of help you work through that if it ever happens. So if you're, like, a radio person or if you're an announcer or if you're in some sort of broadcast school, it's a tool for you to use for you to get used to that. You'd think as the president of a university, she's used to making speeches in public where she may or may not have heard herself through feedback before. I'm not real sure how it makes you slur your words if you can hear yourself in feedback.
Here's what I got to say too. She had to been drunk because a couple of her words were, "We've got the greatest coaches in Michigan."
It was so awful. Coaches, Michigan. It was like how the guys say it on SportsCenter.
Oh, man. The thing that's crazy, too, is all the hatred from Michigan Nation right now for Brady Hoke. They're probably the best coach they could have at their university right now. As much as it's weird to say that, all the hate there, and she's going, "We got the best coaches." Maybe she thought she was in Minnesota. Maybe that's what it is.
Hey, maybe, oh gosh, Minnesota's situation is not better than the Big Ten is such a mess. It really, really is. What about the guy who got drunk or was arrested in his car and then blamed it on Al Borges?
Hey. When you got trouble, blame it on the offensive coordinator.
Oh, my gosh.
According to the Dearborn Press and Guide, a 25-year-old man was arrested on a drunk driving charge the morning of November 3rd. He was found asleep, passed down in his vehicle by police officers, and was ultimately determined to have a blood alcohol content level of 0.24, which is way above Michigan's 0.17 super drunk standard.
Super drunk.
And he's...
Turbo drunk.
This guy was getting booked, right? He's ready to get booked, and he goes... Well, I blame it on Al Borges. I was so upset with his play calling.
He was doing his best Mary Kay Coleman or Mary Coleman impression.
Hey, you got to do what you can get away with, right?
He had apparently soiled himself as well, so maybe that was in reaction to Michigan's play on Saturday as well.
Hey, here, to his benefit, and I don't like benefiting Wolverine fans, but... The Wolverines rushed for negative 48 yards, their worst ground performance in school history.
That was rough.
So, yeah. You know, he's still unidentified, but I'd like to call him the Wolverine Wet Pants Man.
Right. He speaks the truth. I'm sure nobody blames him for wanting to take to the bottle after that.
Has there ever been an Ohio State game where you went right to the bottle? There are games like that.
As someone who is a health and fitness expert, Joe, it's not what I would turn to.
Okay.
But I would say after the national championship loss to Florida, I couldn't watch SportsCenter for like a week. I was working actually at the time for the Buckeye Corner. So even just going into work was like a reminder every single day that my Buckeyes just completely fell flat. It was rough.
Here's the thing, you know, when it comes to losses like that, I know you won't blame offensive coordinator Tom Herman. I know you're better than that.
No, I won't.
Oh, man. It don't get better than Michigan land. I'll tell you what, it's been a great week for Michigan fans. It's been a great week for Ohio State fans. And all I can say is one thing we've learned about Michigan, especially in the Ypsilanti area, is that they're playing shitbird football. I don't know if you heard about this, but the former defensive coordinator of Michigan, Ron English, who's been the coach at Eastern Michigan University for quite some time now, was fired due to words that he said to his team, including saying that they play shitbird football. That with the directly from him, audio was captured from Detroit News, and that's part of what he said and part of what got him fired. It had nothing to do with the fact that Eastern Michigan stinks.
Yeah, I think it had more to do with that. Like we talked about before, there are coaches that can get away with so much more that comes out of their mouth. And they can, I mean, we talked about it, like Lane Kiffin. He was fired. He's also a jerk. Nick Saban is a jerk, but he wins, so he keeps his job. When you're Ron English and your team sucks and you say things like they're playing shitbird football, then you're going to get fired, buddy. You got to be able to just button it up, lock it up, do your job. And then, you know, maybe when they're not performing to your standards, then you can say that. But it kind of sounds like you're blaming the kids for being shitbirds.
For,
I can't say it enough.
Just for reference, I had no idea what shitbird football meant. So I do what I always do, and I went to urbandictionary.com to find out what shitbird meant. I mean... It's a go-to source for me. It's just what I do when I need to find the answers. And shitbird is a completely useless individual who is unaware of his or her own complete uselessness. So I guess that's what shitbird football is.
So what happens to Ron English after you know, this era for him? I mean, because... He's kind of gone downhill from here. That's kind of a big deal, the job that he had at Michigan. I thought he was a decent defensive coordinator there. I was just talking about this the other day. And, you know, obviously every coach wants a head coaching position for the most part. I can't speak for all of them. And I'm sure the next step for him was to play in one of the to be a head football coach in one of the major conferences. And to be terminated after this just does not bode well for him being able to take that next step up.
It's not quite Mike Rice territory at Rutgers because he wasn't throwing basketballs at kids or anything. But,
oh, my gosh.
But there is a lot of words here calling kids the B word, having no respect for you little Quentin. I mean, anytime audio yeah, like this gets out, I mean, it's different than Coach Pelini's situation where he's calling out a fan base, but Ron English called out his whole team, called them a bunch of quitters and stuff like that. It's going to take a while before that clears, but I don't see any reason why he doesn't find his way back as a defensive coordinator eventually. He's going to have to work his way back and probably stay in a level of the MAC conference, but it's crazy to still see these types of things just as we're on the edge of what we saw in the NFL with Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. This gives you... This gives you an insight of really what we're seeing, not only from the player perspective, but what we're even seeing at the college level from the coaching staff perspective and what might be leading to some of this bullying.
And this is the other thing. It may have been going on for a long time for both the Ron English situation and the Rutgers situation and the Miami Dolphins situation and entire culture of football or sports. But what everyone has to understand is we don't have privacy anymore. We don't. Everything we do and say over any device or when we're anywhere in a public place, especially around students and student athletes, we are being monitored by multiple sources. So, you know, I'm not saying to coddle people. I'm not saying to coddle our children and make sure everything is cupcakes and sunshine and rainbows and butterflies and unicorns. I'll add glitter. It doesn't have to be like that, but what he has to understand is there is a certain line, and once you cross that, and again, once your performance starts lacking, then people are going to bring that into call and call it into question.
In this day and age, too, when you look at everything that's happening from that media perspective in the era of Deadspin and the era of TMZ, there are fans out there. There are people inside the program that will leak something like this.
Oh, yeah. It's scary. It's very scary. You never know what anybody's motives are for anything. Nobody has any sort of privacy whatsoever. And the Incognito thing, I just... there are so many layers to it, and I don't know if anybody will really know what is happening between the two of them, except for Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. I don't know if anyone will truly know, but it's being used as the scapegoat for the face of bullying, which is a very, very hot topic right now.
I think it's an example of where our era is these days, and some things that are going to happen more down the road in a situation where I don't give any credit to Richie Incognito, and I'm not giving him any benefit of the doubt here, but it's an era where we're going to see players and we're going to see players that are not part of the main group be exiled, and instead of handling it in different situations that have happened in the past in football, I think we're going to see more people just take it in and then eventually just leave programs or do what they have to fix the problem not really related to the team. Because
in an unhealthy way.
And that's just the way I think that our society is today, and that's going to affect the way that sports is when it comes to the team and when it comes to players holding things in, when it comes to bullying or any type of situations. I think this is an era where if a player gets upset, and we've seen it at college football all over the place, if a player is upset about anything, instead of going to a coaching staff or instead of figuring out the solution in-house, the first step is to do what's best for me and leave and not even look at any other options.
It just really worries me on so many levels. It worries me for our youth. It worries me for the sport. I don't wish anything as far as Richie Incognito goes. I mean, there's never any excuse to speak the way he spoke. Even if that's how you speak to your friend, which he claims that they are friends and brothers and teammates, and that's just the way they communicate. I can't tell anybody how to talk to somebody else, but I can't imagine being so violent and vehement in my language towards any of my friends, my best girlfriends that I will talk to about anything, and my best guy friends that I will talk to about anything, and call them out and call them names. Never would I ever go that far. And Richie Incognito has a track record, and that's not helping him either.
Thing that makes it interesting to me is I think it gives us another introduction to what professional football really is. I mean, these are warriors, these are gladiators, these are guys that will say whatever it takes to make their teammate better in their eyes. And that's part of it. As much as I think Richie Incognito meant what he said, it's still, whether it's not common stance to say something like that, I still think it's still part of today's NFL game.
And, you know, we always are getting the little snippets and mics from the sidelines, and it's always fun to kind of hear what's going on. And, I mean, in reality, neither you nor I will ever really know what it's like to be part of that culture. And you're right. It's naturally a violent game, even being around it on a small, small scale. The testosterone boils, and it is about a lot of money and a lot of competition. And even if it is just kind of the way the culture is, there's such a dichotomy between that life and the locker room life and the NFL life and actual real life and what's going on. And that's kind of what Rich Incognito was saying, is that, yeah, there's stuff that we say to each other in the locker room. And yeah, when it comes across the screen, I'm embarrassed by it when I see it, or when I see it on Twitter or social media. He's embarrassed by it when he sees it like that, but he's like, and none of us would use those words in real life out in the business world. So it just, it's not carrying a level of professionalism. And I don't feel like you would have to be that way in the locker room to be respected and to be admired and to be loved. That your play on the field, I'm sure that there are men out there that are in NFL locker rooms that don't use profanity at all, that are men of great faith, or they are, you know, for any reason. So I don't necessarily think that it is necessary in order to fit in, but again, I can't judge, and I've never been there, so I don't know.
I think the last 2 years we're starting to see maybe a little bit more of the face of the NFL franchise itself, and it's interesting to see how it will go from here and what they'll do to clean it up. Last year, in the years before, it was Bounty Gate and finding out what these coaches are saying and doing to try and win football games and what they're paying to try and win football games. And then we have this situation here. It makes you wonder if we're going to see a change in the dichotomy of coaching in the NFL, or is it going to stay the way that it is?
That's a good question, too. I mean, again, it kind of goes back to the privacy thing, and it will depend on the players and their reactions to it. If someone comes forward, like Jonathan Martin kind of did, Jonathan Martin is still kind of taking the stance that, you know, he's not the one who came forward and said this was a bullying issue. But it also could be that Jonathan Martin is intimidated by Richie Incognito and his kind of influence over the locker room. But like I said, it could be that, you know, if someone comes forward, then, you know, maybe that'll come into light and that coaching will eventually have to change. But as of right now, I don't see it changing, and I don't see it. I mean, like Tony Dungy is a man that he coaches completely different than somebody like Rex Ryan.
I mean, Greg Williams, the Bounty Gate coach, already has another job with the Tennessee Titans. I mean, they will have their opportunities to get back in the NFL. The one interesting spin on the whole Incognito and Martin situation for me is the first thing I thought, okay, if this happened where I work or where you work, Claire, would this be as big of a situation as it is considering it's the NFL?
No. I don't, because money is such a huge driver, and the NFL is the nation's most popular sport. And I just think that it's used as a platform for so much. People just see the opportunity to be able to use the NFL for their own agenda. So there are things that are happening in the NFL and in the game of football that are affecting the game itself now, like with some of the targeting rules and things like that. And there are companies out there that are trying to save the game of football and the integrity of the game of football by teaching proper techniques to our youth, like USA Football and Heads Up Football. I'm a huge fan of both of those. Actually, Urban Meyer, that's what the whole NFL Mom Safety Clinic was all about that I was fortunate enough to attend. They are trying to save the integrity of the game. And there are other companies that are on the other side of that that are trying to use that game to pursue their own agenda. And it's sad.
The question, too, is do we see this change in football? And we'll see over time. All the talk has been, well, if we see this change in football, the things that USA Football are trying to do in making this more of a clean sport, a lot of the detractors say, well, this changes the sport, and there's not going to be as many fans, and it's not going to be as big as it is. Well, I still think people will be turning their TV on Sundays to watch NFL football if it's cleaned up a little bit. That's my personal opinion, and maybe it's because I love college football so much that I get that opinion that the NFL game could be cleaned up better, and there are players and personalities that could clean up locker rooms that aren't getting opportunities. But I still think this game could see a little bit of a cleanup to make it more of a professional sport.
I agree, too. I mean, that's exactly the right wording. There's a level of professionalism that you have to carry and that you should carry. And I'm sure the men that are the most respected in the sport have a very high level of professionalism. If you think about those that do not have a very high level of professionalism and that have been absolute clowns during their careers and have still had plenty of talent, T.O., you see them not being as successful as these men that have had successful careers and a high level of professionalism. So you would think these guys would look to the men who, and I'm sure it's not easy. Like you said, it's a locker room. It's full of testosterone. It's full of tradition as far as hazing is concerned. It's full of a lot of stuff. But it's also a time for you. This is work. This is business. So use it as such.
You know, I was saying I love college football, and maybe that's a way to look at it. But then again, they're governed by a completely corrupt corporation. So who knows what the real answer is.
True.
Well, let's talk Ohio State football as we get ready for Illinois. The Illibuck is in town.
Woo-woo.
A wooden turtle.
Yeah.
We talked about this last time. It's interesting to note that this is the second oldest, quote-unquote, trophy in Big Ten history, behind the Little Brown Jug. It's a really old rivalry. Goes back to 1925, and you had mentioned about there was a live turtle until 1927.
Yeah.
It got replaced by 10 wooden turtles. I'd love to see a real turtle out there.
Again, I'm not real sure what happened to the live turtle, but I know they're supposed to live a lot longer than the 6 years that he did, poor guy. But really, it's just kind of a funny. I think you and I mentioned before about some of the traditions. Jack Park is one of my absolute heroes. I love Jack Park. I can listen to him all day long. He's encyclopedic. In case everyone out there listening doesn't know, Jack Park has written several books about Ohio State. He's an Ohio State historian, and including the Ohio State Football Encyclopedia. He is just a wealth of knowledge. He just remembers absolutely positively everything. Just a really awesome guy to talk to. And he has a story in one of his books about the Buckeyes. I believe they're traveling to Illinois, so we'll have to go back and check this, on a train. And they ended up having to either forfeit the game or something happened. This was way, way back in the 20s because they all got food poisoning on the train and they had to go back home. It was pretty rough.
The one crazy thing I read about this rivalry that I never knew. At halftime, a smoking of a peace pipe took place between members of the two junior honorary societies, which occurred at halftime of the game. You thought Mary Sue Coleman sounded bad on the PA system.
Right. Why would they discontinue the peace pipe?
That's a whole new definition of dotting the I, if you know what I mean.
It's true. Well, it's a discussion for another day and a little bit too controversial for our website, but there are a lot of traditions that the Illini still continue to do that I am not a big fan of. So I'll leave it at that for now. We'll talk about football.
Well, one of the big topics today and heading into today as we record the podcast was the talk of Evan Spencer. It came out as Urban Meyer talked to the media, as he does every single week. He was asked right away by some of the folks at the Dispatch, where have you voted in the BCS for Ohio State? And Coach Meyer said that all season long he's voted his team number two. And Evan Spencer coming out with some interesting words in practice, saying where he felt Ohio State could wipe up either team. Urban Meyer came out later yesterday and said, quote, "I'm very disappointed. I can't stand that. He's certainly not the spokesperson for our team. As a result, Evan won't talk to the media for a long, long time. You don't do that. It's not good sportsmanship." And I think Urban has something. He's hit the nail right on the head. It can be frustrating, though, at this time of the year when you look at the BCS. It starts rolling into effect a couple weeks ago. It's such an arbitrary thing, but it's so important to where your season ends up. I could see where the frustration comes up for Spencer, but it's just something you don't say.
Yeah, he just needs to be more careful. And I know it was probably in the heat of the moment, and even if it was taken out of context a little bit, it's just not appropriate. I mean, these teams are already really good. I've really struggled with who's up top there, Florida State, Ohio State, and Alabama, on where to put them. You don't need to give them any more ammunition either. These teams are going to be tough enough to beat without them having bulletin board material. Evan Spencer says he can wipe the field with you. Oh, great. Now Evan Spencer is a target, or that's something that these guys, I mean, they're like a dog with a bone. All they have to do is latch onto that one thing and let that motivate them and fire them up even more. And they don't need that.
I can tell you from experience being a media member and interviewing players, sometimes you get in situations where, especially at my level at high school and Division II college, where kids forget that they're being interviewed, really. And and I think that's the situation here, where he kind of let his guard down with the media there and was just having a fun conversation that turned into articles on websites.
Yeah. And I'm sure he, like you said, was just getting comfortable, but I'm sure he's not hearing that from the coaching staff. I'm sure the coaching staff is not telling them, you guys are going to wipe the field, whatever that means. You guys can wipe the field with either one of those teams. I'm sure the coaching staff is not telling them that. The coaching staff has done a really, really good job, and Urban has gone out of his way to make everyone understand that this team is hungry and angry and has a chip on their shoulder and focused and dialed in, and you name it, whatever you could possibly use to describe this team, anything but cocky. And it stinks that Evan Spencer had to come out in public and be a jerk about it.
The thing, I think Jack Muir put it perfectly when he was asked about it this week. He said, BCS, I don't care. We got to beat Illinois. That's all I care about.
That's brilliant. Now that's, I'm sure, what he is hearing from the coaching staff.
It will be Illinois and Ohio State, 12 o'clock on Saturday, ESPN. And the Fighting Illini, Claire, they're struggling. Coach Beckman comes in, puts in his staff, and still have the really good talent that they have. But the question is, when are they going to win a Big Ten game? They've yet to do so from last year into this season.
Yeah, not for two seasons. Not a Big Ten win. That is just not going to cut it at all. And again, the Big Ten is down again, but this does not help. This does not help at all. There are teams that Illinois should have beaten and could have beaten and did not. And close is not good enough.
The one thing, we always call it the Ron Zook factor, but he's not there anymore, but it's still there. There's a lot of talent on these teams. Yeah. It's just they don't come together as a team. I mean, Nate Shielhouse, I think, is arguably at least a top three quarterback in the Big Ten.
And he's leading the Big Ten in passing still, I believe.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I thought so. I think maybe if Braxton would have been in all season, he would have given him a run for his money, or Kenny Guyton for that matter. But I think, we can't say after the whole Penn State debacle, but Sheil House, I think, is still leading the Big Ten in passing. He's a talented guy. I feel like he's been there for 10 years.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it's been a long time. He is a Ron Zook recruit, that's for sure. But the problem for this team is they can't run the football. 90th in the nation in rushing, 136 yards per game, and 115th in rushing defense at 239.6 yards per game given up. That's something that's not going to win you ball games.
No, it's not. And I'm sure that's why Sheil House's stats on the passing yards are higher than they kind of normally would be, because they can't run the football, and their offense is forced to pass the ball. But I am not sure what his turnover situation looks like. I'm sure with them having to go to the air predictably that much, that's got to be pretty high. If not, I have much respect.
The ratio is pretty good. I mean, 15 touchdowns to 8 interceptions, but still, like you mentioned, 2,420 yards throwing the football. That's something that lets you know if they want a chance to win ball games, they have to throw the football because they can't run it. I mean, you look at their last game against Indiana, 52-35 loss, and they threw the football 57 times.
Yeah, all that sticks out to me when you say that is 35 points that Indiana scored on them. That's the sad part. I know that's an impressive win for Illinois. Seriously, either way.
It'll be interesting to see how the Buckeyes respond to that offensively. They have the week off. They were able to game plan against this Illinois team, a team that they haven't faced since 2011. Claire, do you remember 2011? The game?
I do, vividly.
Oh.
Vividly. It was much like the weather that's going on in Columbus right now, I believe.
Weather was horrible.
Yeah.
The game plan, a lot of fans thought was horrible. But like Urban Meyer said this week in his weekly media press conference, when you have some mediocre receivers and you have no game players, you got to run the quarterback.
And he was their workhorse all day. God bless Braxton Miller's heart. And it was just wet and nasty and windy, like crazy windy. It was just, they came out with a win. They came out on top, but I remember it very clearly. Being not very fun to watch.
1-for-4 in the air for Braxton Miller in that game as a freshman in 2011. A big game for him in the fact that he was able to squeeze out the victory. It reminds back to the days with Luke Fickell at head coach and his game plan as a head coach, and it brings up a very good point that he's interviewed for a couple jobs, it seems. Florida Atlantic for sure, with Pat Chun, the athletic director there, who has experience at Ohio State as an assistant athletic director. It reminds you back to those days. It makes you wonder if Coach Fickell is ready for a head coaching job and if that's the right one. Of course, Urban Meyer addressing the situation by saying, yeah, I've talked to Pat. I've given him a couple names that I think would be good for the job. But, of course, nothing's going to come to fruition until the end of the season. Is Luke Fickell ready for a head coaching position? And I think more importantly, I don't think Buckeye fans realize how much they'll miss him if he does leave for a head coaching job.
Yeah, I agree. Just Luke Fickell is such an Ohio State guy. Just born and bred here and played for Ohio State. And I know for a fact that fans still appreciate Luke Fickell and what he has done, what he did in the interim between Coach Trussell and Coach Meyer. I know that had to be just an absolute, just a completely scary situation for him to have to deal with on a regular basis. I think everyone is thankful that he did not take over the head coaching job permanently, but it's possible that someplace like Florida Atlantic could give him a chance and he could succeed. And it's also possible that it's a roll of the dice and he could not. It's kind of like a quarterback going to the NFL. You know, they can be successful in their coordinator positions, really successful, really good at it, and then go take a head coaching position and just kind of fall flat.
I really think that he could land at a good position and do well. The question would be if he could land at a good position without taking a job at a lower level in Division I at this point. I still think there are teams out there that are in not major conferences but bigger conferences that would give a look to Luke, like a Pittsburgh did when he was looking for a head coaching job, that he could really have some success in, but maybe a program like Florida Atlantic is the way to start. One program that sticks out to me, and if he does take a job at a lower school, I hope Miami of Ohio gives him a look, because they're winless at this point. They have an interim head coach, and that's just the way that seems great for me. Maybe it's just the old connections between Miami of Ohio and Ohio State. But
they call it the cradle of coaches, Miami of Ohio.
But I think that when you look at a program at the lower levels, a lot of the coaches that you see move on that go on to bigger schools go to a school with a history of success, and that's what Miami of Ohio has, despite the struggles the last few years under Coach Treadwell. I still think that if you can get a start at a program like that, and even one more that you would be familiar with where you can be in an area that you're familiar with, helps too.
Yeah, and actually Urban kind of mentioned that in his press conference about, talking to Pat Chung about his he called them profiles for these coaches. He said that he definitely had a couple coaches on his staff that would fit that profile, but it would be extremely difficult if you've never lived in that area to recruit that pocket. He said it is a really unusual, really different way to have to recruit those kids. And it would take someone with experience and know-how in that area to be able to do it.
That's the thing, though, that Fickell brings to the table. He is a really good recruiter.
Yeah, he really is. He's an intense guy. You know why you and I like him so much, right?
Because he's a wrestler.
Yes, sir. That's exactly why.
You look at this coaching staff, too, and I think it's one of the negatives. It's not necessarily a negative, but to a fan, it's a negative of having a young and hungry coaching staff like Ohio State has. We're going to see these guys move on. I mean, every single coach has an opportunity, I believe, on this staff to move on and take a head coaching job. Any of them could.
I think so, too. And it's scary to me. And there are so many young coaches. There are just a handful of guys that seem to be even over 40, which is exciting for them, and it's exciting for Urban Meyer to have such young, extremely talented, extremely intelligent staff members. But it's scary for us as fans because we love them so much, and they're doing such a great, great job. We'll just have to trust that Urban Meyer and Gene Smith know what they're doing.
I was thinking about it when I was reading that Fickell had interviewed for that FAU job, how many coaches really could, if next year, if there were enough openings, how many could leave? I got to, even just on the offensive side, you look at it, and Tom Herman would be possible, Stan Drayton would be possible.
Yep.
You don't think so?
No, I'm just saying, don't.
I think even Ed Warner would be possible at a smaller school. And on defensive side, Everett Withers has experience coaching, and you know that he wants to get back to head coaching. Fickell's in that boat as well. And we got some of the best young defensive coaches in the country. You know there's going to be teams down the road, maybe not this offseason, but looking to Mike Vrabel to coach at least as a defensive coordinator.
That would be exciting. That would actually be really exciting. As long as Coach Combs stays and Coach Mariotti stays, they're like the heart and soul of the team, I feel like. So everyone else can move on. No, I want to keep the staff exactly as it is. They're amazing. Coach Drayton is extremely – he, I think, more than anyone, has the personality that goes along with having a big-time head coaching job. He really is very charismatic and diplomatic, and the way he seems to be able to handle himself during these press conferences and his funny, big personality, I think he would fit in with having a big, big-time coaching job, and he obviously is doing well here at Ohio State.
One thing we've got to see, too, as fans with him and his relationship and camaraderie with players is unbelievable.
And you can tell that they have a level of respect for him that it's hard to put into words even to see these guys around Coach Drayton, because he's not a very physically intimidating looking guy, you know what I mean? But in person, he is somebody that you just don't want to mess with. You see him and you're like, oh boy, he's the boss. I'm not touching that. I'm not going anywhere near making him angry.
That's a great point. He's definitely got that aura about him. That's what makes great coaches. That's what makes great head coaches especially. So it'll be interesting to see where Ohio State coaches go down the line, but they've got a job to do against Illinois on Saturday, again, 12 o'clock kickoff on ESPN. One of the things that's been really fun to watch, Claire, is this offense start to click all over. It doesn't matter what type of offensive play call we see. And one thing we're seeing is Braxton Miller really step up his play. He went into the season a Heisman Trophy favorite and then had the MCL injury. Now I think he's getting back to where he started the season. Christopher Jason, our friend at Land Grant Holy Land, wrote a great article about the last three games about Braxton Miller. You should check out at landgrantholyland.com. But it touches on just how good he has been over the past three games. It's been fun to watch.
It was a great article. I just want to reiterate that. And the way he broke it down and into play-by-play and the different things that he noticed, Jason did an extremely good job with that. So big props to Jason at Land Grant Holy Grant? Am I saying that right?
Land Grant Holy Land.
Thank you very much. It was a mouthful. But it was great. It was great to watch his breakdown of it and think about what we've seen with Braxton.
The one thing I took from it, too, you look at what Braxton's been able to do, and I think that in a way that Ohio State's offensive line kind of gets disrespected in the fact that they don't get the respect they deserve. In the last three games, 59 completions for Braxton Miller. He's only been sacked three times and only been hit while he was throwing three times.
All I can think of is Rodney Dangerfield when you say that.
I ain't getting no respect. This offensive line, they don't get no respect.
I don't know if they're being disrespected, but I definitely don't think they're getting as much credit as they deserve.
And I think it goes back to the two tight ends, too, and the way that they've been able to block the low number sacks, like Christopher Jason writes, is just this group has been most consistent throughout the season that's out there right now, and it gives ability for Braxton Miller not only to get out of the pocket and flush if he has to, which we haven't seen as much this season as we have down the past. But like Christopher Jason writes, in those 59 completions, 8 scramble plays that were not designed. But it gives him a chance to move in the pocket to make plays. And at this level, with a quarterback with the athletic ability that Braxton has, that is key.
It is absolutely key. And for Braxton, part of that is Braxton to be able to know that he can sit back there and kind of move around a little bit and not have to break down the whole play. It's not a completely broken play just because he's out of that, not even out of the pocket or out of the tackle box, but kind of moving around in the pocket. It's awesome to watch him check down his receivers and to be able to actually have the vision and the timing right. It's just a thing of beauty to watch how far he's come.
I think that's a big part of his transgression as he gets ready to become a professional football player. At the quarterback position is making those moves, like you mentioned, seeing the checkdowns and making sure he finds his receivers open and going to the best target has been an issue in his first two seasons. I don't think this year it's been an issue at all, and really, since he's come back from that injury, has really improved. And I think sitting down, give him an opportunity to see the field from a different perspective maybe. But those are the transgressions that are going to make him in the names of Johnny Manziel, that are going to put him in those talks. I really think, watching him, that he is as big of a playmaker and a game changer as Manziel can be, as Marcus Mariota can be. And if he plays a game like this where his quarterback ability comes into play, then definitely throw him in the mix with those guys.
I think so, too. And he's such, like you said, he's such an athletic guy. It really means a lot, too. He's just got chutzpah. You can see him and you think, oh, boy, this is a sack. And he'll even, like, take a hit or dodge a hit and still make the play happen. And I think that's the major difference between being a playmaker and making something of the best out of a broken play or the best out of a play that's kind of not right, and then just being a running quarterback.
It's funny, looking back to the last time he played Illinois compared to now, and looking at the offense from the transition from there to now, and just looking back the last 2 weeks, where how many times have we said in the past, where's the check down play? I know Eric at our website is huge about that. Where's the check down play? And we saw Braxton go to the running backs quite a bit. We saw a bunch of wide receiver screen plays as well on the check down. That's something that you develop as you stay in the pocket more instead of fearing getting out of the pocket and making a play. And I think that just experience is a big part of that.
I think so, too. And they talk about, you hear a lot, you know, obviously you and I follow football religiously, and you hear a lot about the speed of the game and how it slows down at a certain point in your progression as an athlete. The game actually starts to slow down for you, and that's when you can really know what you need to work on. And that's, I can imagine, once things get, once he's got certain mechanics down, that he doesn't have to think as much, and that the game is kind of slowing down for him, and I'm sure that's exactly where he is now. Now, as soon as it does slow down enough for you to get it, then you get to move on to the next level, and it speeds all the way back up again. But I think once that happens, I can just envision it in my mind. It goes, it will allow him to be a better athlete that way.
Maybe I'm not, I don't claim to be the most competent football fan. I'm a basketball guy. But when I watched the last few weeks, I don't remember him as a quarterback as much stepping up in the pocket as he did in the last couple weeks. And that's just when the instead of when the pocket is closing on you because the defensive line is getting pressure, instead of stepping out of it, he stepped up into the pocket more to make a play. That tells you
kind of fun.
It's cool to see, man.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
When you look at quarterbacks in college football, I still think he's up there in the echelons of the guys with Aaron Murray and Johnny Manziel and Hundley at UCLA and Marcus Mariota. The thing that's interesting about him, and we already talked about it, we talk about it all the time, is he brings a different mentality to the game as a playmaker. Even you can say what you want about the other quarterbacks and their playmaking ability, but there's something special about the just the way he plays the game.
And I can't really compare him to another quarterback. He really isn't like anybody else out there. And nobody really in the NFL, any of the rookies that are in right now, really play like Braxton. He really, truly is a gifted athlete, first and foremost. And Urban Meyer will tell you he's the most athletic person on the team by far. And that's something that you are born with. And that's something that you can develop, of course. But that's absolutely something you're born with. And he has the intangibles, which is not always easy to find. His intangibles are the fact that he is a playmaker, not just with his feet or with his arms, but he really is a gamer. And that's huge. That's huge. That's why I won't mention names. I was going to mention somebody, but that's why. There are certain quarterbacks not currently in the NFL that have gotten farther than they would have because they are gamers and they are winners. We'll put it in quotation marks.
You must be talking about Chris Leak.
No.
It can't be really anybody close. Else. It can't be anybody
really
else.
Really close.
It's got to be Chris Leak. I mean, man, that kid could play. Speaking of guys that have stepped up their game and really impressed the last three games, Carlos Hyde, man, he's been a monster since even in the big game against Northwestern. I mean, having 20-plus carries in back-to-back weeks really was the difference against Iowa with his 24 carries and 149 yards on the ground and two touchdowns. Got two touchdowns against Penn State on 16 carries, 147 yards. And against Purdue, he only had eight carries because of that 56-0 win. Was out of hand by halftime, 111 yards on the ground, averaging 14 yards per carry against Purdue. That is
insane.
Just monstrous.
14 yards per carry is unheard of.
That's with a 42-yard run, but it wasn't like he had four 42-yard runs. I mean,
right?
That's just impressive when you can move the chains like that. And we're going to see a defensive front from Illinois that's much the same as Purdue's, where they're not going to get much pressure. Ugh, I would hate to be a defensive line facing Carlos Hyde at this point of the year.
He's running downhill.
That's what he's doing. That's exactly it. I love watching him run at that style when, and to me, for Carlos, maybe I'm wrong. I'm just a fan. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about.
I know.
About.
We love our guapo.
We love our guapo, but it seems like it's a mentality thing for him. When he turns on the mentality of, I'm going downhill, I'm going to get you.
Yeah, he's choo-choo train.
He's unstoppable.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a combination. We kind of saw it last week, but shades of Beanie Wells.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Yeah, really. It starts to look like that, and it's been awesome. Again, to see the maturity happen and to see the development, he's such a big dude, and he's so strong and so powerful, and he just doesn't stop. He's a locomotive. You watch his legs, and they just keep going and going and going. And I feel like he just keeps getting stronger and stronger. He's like feeding off the energy of the people who are trying to tackle him. It's awesome.
The one thing that's been interesting for Carlos is on the road, he has a better yards per carry average, a yard better at 8.2 than he does at home, and three of his 10 touchdowns are on the road. I like to see a guy that can run on the road and just at Memorial Stadium. I think he's going to have a huge game against this Illinois team. I would love to see 200 yards. I would just love to see that.
I would, too. I'm sure Carlos would, too. And it doesn't – the sad part is he could get 200 yards and it still wouldn't necessarily be an unbalanced offense since Illinois' defense is so bad. I mean, if they had their way, he could get 200 rushing yards and still have a balanced passing game.
And do it by half.
And do it by half. Okay, we stepped too far.
Okay. Maybe I got a little too excited there, but I just love the way he's playing right now. And he's getting up there near 100 carries on the season. I'll be interested to see if he can match what he did last year with 185 carries with the three missed games. He's already put better numbers when it comes to yards per carry and when it comes to just pure performance. He already has as many receptions as he did last year as well. So I like to see him maybe bluster more of that part of his game, and I think they're definitely working on it. We've seen it the last few weeks where he's become a receiver out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
When you can get a bowling ball moving forward, not just north-south, but on the edge, that's something that sets up speed on the edge too.
Yeah, that little swing pass that they like to go to him, or just a quick little out, that's perfect for Carlos. That's perfect, especially since they think he's going to block out there. It's great. It's fantastic. And then our tight ends are involved in that situation. I'm all for it. And that's making him money. The more useful he could possibly be, the more money he will eventually be able to make.
Well, I guess the real question for Ohio State fans would be, well, the last few weeks have been rough in the fact that we've had blowouts at halftime. We've had games that have been out of hand. I mean, last game, Kenny Guyton was able to run it 9 times for 98 yards. That just tells you what the difference was in that ballgame when it comes to talent. You look down the road, you look at the BCS, and I hate talking about it as much as Urban Meyer does or Jack Muir does, but mm-mm. When you play these types of teams, at this time of the year to have games over by halftime, is that a benefactor or is that something that is negative in the fact of continuing to get your guys out there if you were to go undefeated and get into a national championship game?
No, I don't think they'll go soft. I mean, it's still conference play, even though they have been blowouts. And the real benefit is that we're getting our younger players touches. We're getting some real game experience for these younger players and the players that we're going to be seeing a lot next year when we're starting to have to replace some of these guys. So I'm excited for it. Of course, I'm going to be a fan of a blowout, and I'm like one of those sadistic people that actually likes watching a blowout. I have my nerves are completely shot, so the fact that if it's a blowout, I'm completely going to have a good day. But, yeah, I think the benefit is that they're getting touches and that they're still having game experience. Our starters are having game experience. I don't think that that's going to be a problem leading into if they do get to go to a national championship game in order to face the big boy teams.
I just pictured you during a blowout kind of slurring your words like Mary Sue Coleman because you're letting loose a little bit.
Me and my protein shakes, Joe.
What are you putting in those protein shakes during blowouts? That's the question.
Nothing exciting, yeah. Unfortunately.
See, here's the thing, Claire. You're so special that you don't need any of that stuff.
Oh, wait a minute. I don't think that was a compliment.
Well, you could take it either way, right?
True.
Well, one thing that was interesting, too, against Purdue was the tight end play. We've talked about how we'd like to see it more involved, but 7 receptions from the 2 tight ends, Vinette and Heuermann. Heuermann with 116 yards, 5 receptions and a touchdown. Vinette with 1 touchdown as well. You love to see that in the red zone at this time of the year. We've seen the one thing that it brought me back to watching some games this weekend and on Thursday, watching Stanford and watching Alabama, what they do well and what I still think, and I'm old school, what I think still works at this level of football to win a championship is in the red zone, they get big up front, they either run the ball or they find their targets, and to see our tight ends work their way into the end zone is huge.
That is huge. I mean, the tight ends are always involved, so it's hard to say, you know, give the tight ends involved, but what we really mean is get them the ball, which is super exciting to watch, too. These defensive coordinators in the Big Ten have to be like, really? Now we have to game plan for these guys, too? Like, I think, really, they thought the Ohio State didn't have tight ends the Saturday before. I think that they, I mean, because he was just so crazy open. Like, no, he was way too far downfield to be blocking for anybody. What did they were just going to let him go? That's not my job. It was great. It was awesome to watch.
It's interesting where the offense goes from, and I love Stoneburner, from where he was a more of a slot receiver at tight end to now actually having that look with 2 tight ends. It's to me, it's a defensive offense at times, but it's effective.
True. Stoneburner, by the way, total side note, is he at Green Bay?
He was. I'm not sure if he still is.
Okay, just curious. Thank you. I know you're going to your keyboard now.
Yeah, I know that they signed him. I still believe he's with the team as of October. I don't know if he's played much because, quite frankly, the Packers suck.
Yeah, but they do.
But they got Stoneburner. So I think he's actually going to start seeing some playing time. You get a 6'3", 249-pound tight end that can play H-back receiver. Who needs Tim Tebow? I said it, Claire.
You did say it. Dang it, Joe. No, but we have 2 really talented, and we're constantly, I'm constantly asking you, who's the starter again? Who's the starter again? Because they're both being involved in such a heavy way now, and I just love the game plan. And you're right. It's kind of like a defensive offense, but it absolutely works, especially like we were talking about before with getting Carlos involved, and especially some of our younger running backs who really need the extra help with blocking, like Zeke, and it seems to help them be able to have the time and the patience to develop. And then there are safety valve. If the play breaks down or they're a check down, it's great. I love seeing them involved.
I guess the question would be, in to my opinion, what we've seen the last few weeks since Iowa, really, is this his defense good enough for the prime time for a national championship stand against an Alabama or against a Florida State? And when I watch this defensive team, sometimes I go, I don't know. But then the way the secondary's played the last few weeks makes me go, well, maybe.
Maybe. They've stepped it up a notch or two, and they seem to be playing at a more acceptable level. But it's kind of a scary thought to think about right now, as far as that second. So the secondary is really all that's kind of worrying me about, other than Curtis Grant being a little banged up right now. And it sounds like he should be able to play on Saturday, as far as I know. Urban Meyer mentioned that Curtis Grant had an ankle sprain and a low back injury. And he had not been going full speed, but I think is going to, as of Tuesday, as of today, when we're recording the podcast, that Curtis Grant would be going full speed and full contact. So that's really the Urban Meyer has only expressed his concern with the secondary and with the linebacker play. And I say just, like that's not a big part, but it seems like their level of play has increased over the last couple weeks. So maybe they really are starting to adjust and to gel, and that's huge. That's so important on the defense, is that everyone is in communication and is doing their job and is trusting each other.
I think it was good to see Urban Meyer say at his press conference this week. He was asked, does this team have a good enough defense to be the team Ohio State wants to be? And without a doubt, he said yes. I mean, it was a without a doubt type of yes answer. So I think he believes they have the numbers there and the guys they need to be successful. And it shows, like we've talked about already throughout the show, how important these games are late in the season against quote-unquote nobodies, where you get the reps, you get the opportunity to make mistakes and learn from them, you get the opportunity to really get on a roll and excel in games against teams you should be beating, but teams that give you that opportunity to get that confidence.
And we are spoiled as Buckeye fans right now, and I couldn't be happier to be spoiled. But, you know, when we have these wins and we can talk about stuff that we need to improve, or it was a win, but blah, 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 it's still really nice. That's a luxury that we have right now, and we're not talking about a loss, and this is what we have to improve upon. So it's kind of awesome to be a Buckeye. I don't know.
Well, Ron English called his team shitbird football. Mike Vrabel earlier this week said about Joey Bosa, the freshman, who's just unbelievable, not only physically, but what he's doing. He said, you know what Bosa did against Iowa? He beat the shit out of their defensive line early in the game. That's what he said in the press conference.
I love Vrabel.
That's what you got to love about Coach, and that's what you got to love about what Joey Bosa and this defensive line brings to the table.
Joey Bosa is a freak of nature. To think that it's an 18-year-old kid, that is a kid in a grown man's body, and he is so smart. He has got such an intuition for the game already. Watch out. What a stud.
He's unbelievable to watch up front.
When you look, a savage.
I like that.
Savage. That's from my guy, from my Jimmy Preston, the one man thrill ride. He says that. Savages.
Oh man, Joey Savage Bosa.
Right.
That's like a wrestling name.
I just gave him a new name. That's exactly what that guy is from. Did you know he's a wrestler?
I did not.
One man thrill ride is a professional wrestler.
No wonder he's eating bacon, egg, and cheese. Hold the chi. That's right. Oh, man. I wish I was a one-man wrecking crew like that guy.
That'd be pretty awesome. Joey Bosa is a one-man wrecking crew. He really is. It's pretty awesome to watch and to know that he will develop even further. And I just pray that he stays healthy.
Definitely will be key throughout the season. Ohio State looking to remain undefeated. They take on Illinois on Saturday, 12 o'clock. We'll be watching. We'll be in the live chat as well. Ohio State basketball on Saturday, coming up against Marquette. It's going to be busy. It's that time of the year.
Life is good. That sounds like a great weekend.
Definitely. Life is good. I want to thank you for listening to the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Claire, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much, Joe.
That'll do it for this week's edition of the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour. Of course, for more commentary, visit our website, thebuckeyebattlecry.com. And as always, go Buckeyes!
For more on the Buckeye Battle Cry Radio Hour, visit iTunes or check out our media page. For more Buckeye news and notes, visit www.thebuckeyebattlecry.com.